Carpaccio.
Sal!
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 Carpaccio.
On WGR.
Sal Carpaccio joining us on the Western Hotline. Happy Halloween, everybody. Bills back to work this week ahead of the Dolphins game. We've talked a little bit about the Colts' decision on Anthony Richardson. Plenty about some candy as it's Halloween. And Sal's joining us too. You wanna write the Yankees obit, Sal? How you feeling after last night's game? I mean, maybe you'd already kind of, maybe not written off the series, but you knew it would have been a battle. At 5-0, I thought.
It would have been tough not to have been feeling back into it by that.
Belief might have been pretty strong at 5-0.
Oh, it was. Yeah, I'm really disappointed this morning, for sure. It hits differently when you have, you know, a child. Like, people have told us all about this with the Bills and stuff. And, you know, and I get it when they're of that age and, you know, you're kind of rooting together and it's the first kind of championship that you've experienced together for your team to be in, you know. So that hurts. He's okay. I'm okay. It's sports. But it definitely was a false sense of security last night at 5-0. There's no doubt. What's crazy is I did not see anything that led to the bases loaded until after it happened because I was actually putting Max to bed. And I looked, I'm like, oh man, bases loaded. And then I saw how it happened with Judge and the error on Volpe. And then I watched live the error on, you know, the situation with Garrett Cole. He doesn't cover first base. And it just, once that was starting to happen, you knew, like, oh my God, like, they could blow this. And then when they get a couple hits, yeah. So I think more than anything, look, I mean, it's sports. For me, guys, the Yankees had a much better season than I thought. I actually thought, and, you know, Josh will tell you from the Extra Point Show back in April, like, I thought the Orioles would win the division. I just said, this Orioles are too good. They're young. They're athletic. They're really good. So I had a nice year watching the Yankees unexpectedly get to this point, but blowing it like that just really hurts. You know what I mean? So, yeah, that's where I land right now. And now we'll see what happens with Soto. And, you know, obviously the managerial stuff and all that, I get it. But, you know, I don't know if they can keep Soto. They have to give him something probably like you do with Ohtani in L.A. And I just don't want him to go to the Mets because that's a big rumor could happen.
Ohtani to the – wait.
No, who? No, it's Soto.
Soto, I was going to say. Soto, that's Ohtani, yeah. He just signed a pretty big deal.
No, the contract, yeah.
Yeah.
Ohtani got
the contract for the Yankees, like, it might have to give something like Ohtani and the Dodgers. I don't know if the Yankees would do something like that. They typically don't.
Yeah.
You know, with the deferred money. But you might take something like that, is my point, because
– yeah.
He's just, what's he going to command? I mean, it's crazy how much money he's going to make.
Yeah. And for the Dodgers, I mean, Ohtani pitches next year. I think, at least.
Yeah, I know, right?
So, oh, we'll see what happens there.
And Freddie Freeman, an unbelievable series, like 12 runs batted
in. He almost hit another homer last night. That was the Judge catch at the wall.
He had the record for runs batted in a series. Tied it.
They are really, just really good, you know, and that's why, like, you give them a couple of outs that you shouldn't give them, and that's what happens. You know, that's baseball, and yeah, I respect it. I do. I mean, you know, it sucked last night watching, but I respect the fact that, like, they just grind and just put you in a position where you can't make a mistake. And that's tough on anybody. And that was tough on Cole, I think, once he got in that situation. He got out of it at the end, but then they just couldn't hold it.
Well, the good news is, Sal, I think pitchers and catchers report in 2 weeks, right? It's pretty soon.
I thought about that last night, Jeremy. Yeah. It's crazy.
It comes
right?
up that's pretty amazing. Quick. It does come up pretty quick. Anyway,
it's the shortest offseason for sure.
All right. So, yeah, really, October 31st. I mean, we're almost into November for this series if it went any longer. All right, Sal, so let's get to business with the Bills, and we'll get your candy takes at the end of the segment if you've got some time for that.
Oh,
so the Barnes Firm injury report, brought to you by the Barnes Firm, injured for help, call 1-800-8-MILLION. A lot of names with full next to their name. So maybe give us why that does happen, why you list guys that are full. This is the point about if they're getting treatment, they must be listed, I think. And
That's exactly right.
Okay, go ahead.
So the Bills have, I mean, the Dolphins have 16. I think the Bills have 19 maybe or 20. I have to go back and look and count them all either way. And for the Bills side of things, they have that many, and yet only one player did not practice. And that wasn't even due to injury. That was Alec Anderson yesterday, was excused for personal reasons. They had four guys limited. Terrell Bernard did practice. He was limited. Reggie Gilliam was practiced. He was limited with a hip injury. It's kind of a surprise. We didn't know that. Curtis Samuel limited with a pectoral. And then an interesting one was Amari Cooper. We were told by Sean McDermott, he wouldn't practice due to a wrist injury, but he said they'd take it one day at a time. We went out to practice. He was dressed. I mean, he was practicing. I'm like, all right. My guess is there. People say, how can the coach not know? I think what probably happens in that situation is Sean McDermott gets a gets an update from the trainers in the morning. Hey, we're going to lay off him today. Got the wrist injury. It's Wednesday. And then Sean comes to talk to us. And in the meantime, Amari probably goes, gets rechecked by the trainer, says, you know what? I'm going to give it a go. Let's try it. So then he goes out there. And I think that could happen. You know, and it's not completely rare, but it's not very normal. But that's encouraging news. All right. The reason why is because, you guys, the NFL has really, really cracked down on the injury reports and making sure that everybody who has any sort of ailment that's getting any sort of treatment is getting listed. And really the biggest reason is for gambling, as you can imagine, right? I mean, the explosion of gambling that's happened throughout the league and all the, I mean, hey, we're reading, you know, stuff for gambling and FanDuel and things like that a lot, right? And you know just how big it is. Remember last year, the Cincinnati Bengals and the wrist injury and what happened, right? I mean, like, it was just a big deal to, you know, hey, why wasn't he listed? This is not like Bill Belichick back in the day who he'd have to list everybody because he just was doing a big, you know, sticking it to the league because they gave him a little bit of crap one time about Tom Brady not being listed. That's not why. They're doing it because they have to. And if not, they're going to get in trouble, a lot of trouble by the league. Get fined and, you know, there's repercussions. And the league is very serious about this. So anybody who's getting any sort of treatment on anything is going to get listed on the injury report.
How good of a sign is it that Terrell Bernard and Curtis Samuel were back?
It's a great sign. They are still limited. So we'll see how it goes this week for them. Terrell spoke afterwards to us, and he said that he's still working through some things with the ankles. He's got some hurdles to clear before, you know, that he's going to play. And, you know, when asked what hurdles those are, you know, he's like just feeling better, feeling good. And, you know, they'll work throughout the week to see, you know, where that stands. But, you know, it's very encouraging that he's there. And then Samuel as well. But I think, you know, he hasn't made an impact, right? And I think for me, I just want to—I'd love for Curtis Samuel to play and just make an impact one game and say, okay, that's why you signed the guy. But the other part, guys, is hey, Amari Cooper, he's dealing with a wrist injury, so you'd really like to have, you know, Curtis Samuel and all your guys available and healthy if, you know, there's something bothering him.
I'd be just curious to see too how they would use him. Maybe it wouldn't be that different, though, I guess, because beginning of the year, it was a lot of, hey, he's in the backfield on this play, and now it's a bubble screen on this play, and, you know, he's in motion here. Like, they kind of, I guess, already used him this way, but I wonder, Sal, the guy, I know it's, like, natural. I even heard it in the press conference this week, like, comparing Shakir to Cole Beasley. Like, it's natural to compare guys to players that used to play for the team. And I was thinking about Samuel recently about, like, I wonder if he's just going to get used the way Isaiah McKenzie used to get used on this offense. Maybe he makes more of an impact, but I don't know what other role is there for him, given now that Cooper's on the team and Coleman and Shakir are just playing well enough to where I think if everyone's healthy and rested, I don't think you would ever take them off the field for a regular receiver role right now for Curtis Samuel.
Yeah, and I think in some level that's got to be disappointing, right, Joe? Because I don't think that's why he was signed. You know, you don't give him $8 million to play that role, but now here we are. And I think you kind of have to maybe shift your philosophy, what you're thinking, how you use him and everybody else. I wonder, too, sometimes how much, you know, getting Amari Cooper, the shape of the wide receiver room now is impacted by the fact that he has not been impactful. And they had to kind of change their own philosophy on it. I just can't sit here still and think that when they signed him for $8 million a year, considering what he did with Joe Brady in 2020, and he's had a good career outside of that, too. Now, it hasn't been unbelievable, spectacular numbers, but it's been nice. It's been good. He's been a solid player. I just can't believe that, like, this was the plan, that he would be this, you know, not involved. There's been injuries. There's no doubt. You know, you go back to preseason and the turf toe. It just doesn't seem like it's gone the way it's supposed to. But, you know, that's why you adjust. And, hey, now Amari Cooper's here. And, you know, we'll see where it goes. So, yeah, just real quickly, guys, back to the injury report. You know, the Dolphins are the same way, by the way. They 16 guys. And there's a bunch of guys like Javon Holland, you know, who's on the report, who we don't know if he'll play. Kader Kohu, don't know if he'll play. They have 10 guys who didn't play. Four of them are rest, didn't practice. Four of them are rest days. Six are due to, you know, injuries. Excuse me, Tyreek Hill. He's on there, but he had a rest day. But this is why I think I always try to talk people down a little bit who get so crazy and upset about like the like how many injuries the Bills have. It never stops. Well, it you have to look. I mean, this is professional football. They're going to get banged up. And if somebody has anything, like here, let's pick somebody here. As somebody who's like, how about Dawson Knox, ankle? Yeah, he missed a day of practice last week. Well, he's probably still doing something with trainers, getting checked out. So guess what? They got to slap an ankle injury on him. Yesterday at practice, he's a full participant. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just the way it goes. So just get used to it going down the road. And, you know, it's not the number of players on the report that matter. It's how many guys miss games, actually, that matter, to be honest with you.
On that Dolphins report, he's not injured. You mentioned it's a rest day. Are you wondering at all about Hill right now for the Dolphins? Because he is, I think it's one 100-yard game since week 12 of last season. Like, it's one in his last 10. I mean, he still looks insanely fast. Maybe it's more about the offense. And, of course, Tua missed, I think, 3 of those 10 games. But, like, it's funny, Sal, like, he's still considered one of the best receivers in football, and the combination of what he's done, what little he's done against the Bills, plus, really, he's kind of, I don't want to say hit a wall, but he's regressed statistically recently, that I'm going to this game on Sunday, and I just feel like I'm not, I should be worried, I feel like I'm just not really respecting the threat as much as maybe I should be.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if this is where you're going with it, but what I've thought about him, Joe, is... is he a trade candidate? What if they lose?
Okay.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, this is a guy where would they decide, hey, you know, we can start moving on now? I thought about him as going back to the Chiefs a little while ago, to be honest with you. Then they obviously made their trade already for a wide receiver, DeAndre Hopkins. I really thought a couple weeks ago, man, could the Chiefs look to bring Tyreek Hill back? They probably need a receiver. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't feel like he's the exact same, but you have to respect the speed. You have to respect the big playability still. There's no doubt about it, especially with Tua still now playing quarterback again. You never know. He just, bam, here comes. He could have that great. I think it happened against Jacksonville in the opener.
Yeah, that was his one.
He had the one. Yeah, like an 80-yard touchdown, yeah. Right?
Yep.
I mean, it just, you have to respect that, no doubt about it. I wonder about, speaking of guys that, you know, could they possibly wind up dealing them? We had Matt Bove and I did It's Always Game Day last night, and we had Alan Poupart, who writes for the SI for the Dolphins, and he talked about, you know, Calais Campbell, and this could be his last year, but he's having a really good year. Like, if they lose this game, could they trade Calais Campbell? Like, trade him to a contender. I mean, that's the situation they're in as well. You know, so it's interesting to see. Zach Sealer, by the way, still out with the crazy story last week. You got to feel so bad for the guy. He got poked in the eye at practice on Thursday, and then you find out on Friday it's a broken orbital bone. So he didn't practice. He didn't play last week. He's a big player for them. And, you know, we'll see if he plays this week, but he's also out with an eye injury again this week. Emmanuel Ogba out with a bicep injury and an illness, didn't practice yesterday. So they're dealing with a lot of injuries on that side.
Let me take this out for a test drive real quick, because you're talking about the trade deadline, just had me think of it, and Campbell. If they lose this game, what if Jordan Poyer is on the trade market? Do you think that's an impossible idea?
Impossible? I would not see the Buffalo Bills giving up an asset for Jordan Poyer or Tre'Davious White. I'll say it that way.
Okay.
I mean, it's just, let's just say those two players were released.
White for sure. Yeah.
Would the Buffalo Bills, you know, it's funny you say that. We asked Alan Poupart again last night. Matt said, how is Jordan Poyer doing? And Alan's response, it was really interesting. It was basically the exact same response any of us would have given at the end of last year about Jordan Poyer, which is, he said, great leader, intangibles, just goes out there and tries the ball every single time he's on the field, just doesn't have it anymore.
Yeah.
Basically, it's what he said.
Yeah. The only reason I'm even asking is because we kind of do this with safety, right? Like, every time that I think of, hey, could they trade for a safety? Could they trade for a safety? I always want to kind of poo-poo it a little bit, because we know how much they want somebody that they know is buttoned up with the communication, that understands the defense, and this is a guy that, of course, would understand that defense. But I think you're right. Like, one, it's in division, and two, I think I've seen the same thing, that just, it's the speed, right? Like, the speed is just not, it wasn't there always in an elite level in the first place, and now it's really downhill.
And I think that's what you're seeing from that's what you're seeing in Miami too, is what they're talking about. So yeah, I mean, I wouldn't do it, Joe. I wouldn't give up any asset for him. I wouldn't give up an asset for Tre'Davious White. You know, but if those guys were released, let's say for some reason, and they were out there, I think that you'd have to at least consider practice squad options for them. I don't know if that would even work out. They don't want to get any older necessarily, but it's nice to have insurance for guys who know the system. And, you know, would they want to do that? Would they want to be in a situation where they're on their team that they, you know, made their careers with, essentially, and then they're just, you know, practice squad options? I just don't think guys are generally interested in doing something like that, to be quite honest with you. So it's interesting how all this is going to shake out between now and Tuesday. Tuesday is the trade deadline. Real quickly, one other thing on injuries. Sean McDermott was asked about Matt Milano yesterday. Our buddy Josh Reed of Channel 4 asked him for an update. And there was a little bit of confusion, I think, from a lot of people on the response that McDermott gave. But I'll just give it to you this way, because I think what happened was, because the way that Josh asked the question, he said, can you give us an update on Matt Milano if there's still some hope that he can return this season? McDermott said, yes, there is. So like I tweeted out, McDermott said there's some hope for Matt Milano to return. Well, without knowing the context, a lot of fans were like, oh, some hope? Oh, my God. Obviously, that means he's not coming back. That's not what happened. I took his answer, and I wrote the whole thing out on transcribed it and wrote it. It's at my Twitter, at Sal Sports. I thought McDermott seemed very, very encouraged and optimistic about it. In fact, so much so, guys, that Bove and I, on our podcast last night, said we should play a, you know how like a baby do game? We should have like when Matt Milano's 21-day window opens game. That's how confident we both are that that's going to happen at some point. Like what day that's going to be.
No. All right. How transformative do you think that would be for this defense?
It's a good question. You know, some people still wonder, well, what is he really after not playing since week 5 of last year? I mean, you're talking a year plus of not playing. That's a leg injury, and then there's the bicep injury. Dorian Williams is really starting to play well. That's great. I respect all that. But he's Matt Milano, and I think he's the starting linebacker as soon as he walks back onto your you know, active game day roster. And transformative, Jeremy? I don't know how transformative it would be. I do think it makes the defense better. Like, and that's a good word to use, because maybe they probably can play differently, right? I mean, Dorian Williams is not Matt Milano when it comes to coverage, that's for sure. But I think the question is very fair. Matt just turned 30, I think. I think that's what his age is now. I have to look. 30, 31. He's right in that area. He hasn't played in a while. But look, I mean, it gave him extra time for the leg to heal with the bicep. That's the silver lining here that he's been out. I do think, you know, if you put Matt Milano next to Terrell Bernard, yeah, I think it can change your defense a lot, actually, on the different options that you have and what you can do.
Sal Capaccio. Sal, all right, Halloween tonight, what's the Capaccio household give out? And what are you on the hunt for when you're on Halloween? What candies are you looking for, and what are you getting out of the bag and throwing to somebody else?
So I think we just buy like a lot of the we like a lot of the variety packs, you know what I mean?
Yeah, the mixed bag of fun size.
Yeah. So we do a lot of that, and we don't get a lot at our house, but it's weird because like literally two streets over, it is totally packed in our neighborhood. So there's an area where like all the kids go and everybody is. There's some great houses. They really do it up. There's people outside. It's awesome. It's one of those things where last year I took a video even. And I'm like, this is my neighborhood. People are like, that is pretty cool, right? And that's in the city, you know. So we're not in the suburbs and like the side streets. I mean, and there's cars everywhere, but it's great and you can see it. The kids everywhere. So I'm a chocolate lover. Chocolate candy. I like things with chocolate with almonds. Chocolate almond. I like Kit Kats. I like Twix. Like the traditional chocolate candies. That's what I'm looking for. So that's what I'd be on the hunt for.
The bars. More than the traditional
M&Ms are good too. Right? But give me the M&Ms with almonds over regular M&Ms. Like I don't know. I'm a chocolate with almonds guy.
Almond M&Ms. Those are out there.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't think I've seen M&M's.
Is it the almonds or the M&M's with almonds, right? Not, and there's peanut too, though. There's both. What's the yellow bag? What's the yellow M&M bag?
That's the peanut M&M's. There are so many iterations of M&M's now that I can't even. There's caramel M&M's.
That's what I mean. What's the red
butter,
one?
Then? Peanut butter is the red one, I think.
Oh, okay. That's what I mean. Then give me the peanut one. It's fine. Almonds, peanuts, good. I love it all with the chocolate. That's what I meant to say. Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Sal.
All right, guys, you got it.
Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline on the Bills as they gear up for Miami. Tonight, Texans and Jets. Can I give you a stat on the Texans right now?
Yeah.
What's Nico Collins' status, by the way? He's working his way back.
He's going to play next week. This is his last game off IR, and I saw, having him in fantasy, at warm-ups last week before the game, they were clocking him at 22 miles per hour.
Okay, so he's getting close.
He's going to play next week.
But they're playing it safe. 1 point on the Texans and the Jets. This is from Judah Forking, who's on Twitter, does a bunch of he's at Throw the Damn Ball on Twitter. Great account, like a lot of fun analytics
it
stuff.
Sounds like an account that I would like to throw the damn
ball. It's very, very good.
Yeah.
Betting stuff, like inside of lines and how teams match up. Anyway, he had this about the Texans. Last year, the Texans had a 10.5% explosive pass rate. Mm-hmm. That was good for second in the league last year. So very explosive passing offense, right? Collins breaks out. Tank Dell breaks out. C.J. Stroud breaks out. This year, explosive pass rate, they're 6%, which is near the bottom. Eighth worst. So they went from second best to eighth worst. That could be because, in part, they've missed Collins for a couple of weeks. And two, for this game, no Diggs. Hmm. So it's Tank Dell and
Robert Woods.
Robert Woods and Dalton Schultz and Joe Mixon.
They also, John Mechie, who was a second-round pick of theirs a couple years ago, maybe, but he really hasn't played much. So I don't think you know what you're getting there.
Right.
So it's an old guy, and then it's a guy you have no idea what you're getting. Yeah.
So you get that on the road against the Jets, whose defense is, I mean, whatever, a lot of reputation. They do get.
They did let New England drive 60 yards on them at the buzzer last week.
That's right, they did. But they only gave up 247 yards to New England.
Right before that, they were great.
So just something to keep in mind. I think the Jets are going to win tonight.
They're favored.
They should be.
I think it's probably pretty rare that a two-win team is favored against a six-win team. I wonder how many times that's ever happened.
That's wild.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of get it. The Texans have also only won close games this year, right? Like, they haven't looked spectacular, as just pointed out. And the Jets are losing a lot of close games. So I could get there on the Jets being favored, honestly, even though they have four fewer wins.
803-0550. When we get back, two notes on the Sabres. One, where they are one of the most, blank, and one, where they are the worst, blank.
We were seeing a good process that we were seeing in practice. It was coming out game. We had about three or four real good efforts before we finally got the results. Even in the Dallas game, we only had one power play. We didn't score, but we created a ton of momentum because of the scoring chances that were created off of it. That positive momentum then led to us scoring 2 5-on-5 goals to break that game open a couple minutes later. And that's the power play. You want to create momentum for your team. Certainly you want to score, which we did last night, but you want to create positive momentum with the process, with the habits, with the work ethic that goes into it.
Sabres assistant coach Seth Appert, we chatted with him on Tuesday. Happy Halloween. Good morning, Jeremy and Joe. Sneaky Joe. Is there a costume that goes with that?
What would a sneaky costume be? I would pick like a sneaky character from somewhere, I think is what I would do.
Who's the best sneaky character? A ninja?
The butler from Mr. Deeds.
The butler. A ninja's good too, though.
Yeah.
I just literally Googled, like, what were sneaky movie characters? Swiper the Fox.
Who's that?
From Dora the Explorer.
Oh. We're not a Dora household yet.
No?
No.
The snake from Jungle Book?
Ka.
You knew the name of the snake from Jungle Book off the top of your head?
Yes.
That's pretty impressive.
Well, we read some stories at night for kids, and one of them has Ka.
Okay. I don't know how you would dress as a snake, though, Well, there's probably a suit, but then you couldn't use your arms or anything.
803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. All right, some Sabre stuff in a moment. We've reset where we are. We actually opened the show talking about like the worst Halloween candy. I named Smarties, and then Joe said he would pay $300 for a lifetime supply of Smarties when I feel like you should pay $8. But hey, that's okay.
Well, $8 wouldn't win the silent auction.
I think it might win the silent auction.
Well, and someone else said $25.
All right, well, then that person would have them, and I'd just have to deal with it.
Well, no, I would be the one because I'm going to be 10 times more than what anybody else had bid.
You're going to sell them on the secondary market?
I'm the guy in Guillotine that bids. I'm like, oh, first time in Guillotine. Oh, look, Javonte Williams available, $400. Yeah. Nobody else bids $50.
So candy conversations out there. I tease going to the break, though. The Sabres are one of the most and one of the worst in two different things. We'll get to that and then get a call in. So Elliot Friedman in his 32 Thoughts wrote that the Sabres are active right now. that Kevin Adams is actively trying to add. One of the more active teams calling around trying to add to this roster. And that would not come as a surprise, right? Because it feels like this was a thing they should have done in the offseason and did not get accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
So for Kevin Adams to maybe still be doing that would make sense. So that's part of it. There's your first half, is that the Sabres are one of the more active teams right now trying to add.
Isn't the only thing you could see them adding a top six forward?
Yes.
That's like obvious, isn't it?
Would they
maybe center even at this point? Because we've wondered, Paul's talked about this a bunch. Maybe Cousins, there's a move to the wing in his future, and there's no opportunity to do it because you don't have another top six centerman. Unless you think Ryan McLeod is going to take that jump, you don't have another guy. You don't have the opportunity. Maybe it doesn't matter. Center, wing, whatever. Just somebody that is good that plays in the top six.
Yep.
Although I don't know who's trading that guy at this point.
No, it's an odd time of year to trade no matter who you are.
Leafs Nation's talking about Marner all the time.
The
now,
Leafs
but
did
like
just
that,
make a trade. They just traded Timothy Liljegren to San Jose.
Yeah.
Dump salary and some picks and
also,
stuff.
Also, Marner's just like a mega trade. Like, that's just, come on. Right?
Yep. Well,
it's too big. That's too big. It feels like it's too big for them.
That's where the Sabres are one of the most. Where are they worst? MGM, Sports MGM, just released today a ranking of the arenas. The NHL arenas, first to worst. Mm-hmm. I opened that. I clicked, fully expecting. I'm like, where's this going to land? Where is KeyBank Center going to land on this ranking NHL arenas?
You asked me, and I guessed like last.
You guessed correct.
Yeah.
Last. 32. Last. Worst arena in the league.
It
has a new roof, has a new Jumbotron, has new food items. I mean, they've made improvements in the last couple of years, and I don't know exactly how meticulous this process was, but ranked last. So, active on the trade front, worst arena.
I don't really notice how subpar the arena is until I go to Toronto, which only is once in a while. Like, last year I went to that arena, which, by the way, like, that wasn't number one on this list. They were 14th. Like, middle of the pack NHL arena, and you're walking around, it's like you just jumped into the future. Like, it's a spaceship in comparison. But, yeah.
Yeah. So that's that. You want to throw a thought our way? You can. Jets and Texans tonight. We are Jets fans rooting for the Jets to get it. Even though it's fun to watch them lose. This is the good part.
I don't know that I can. I don't think I can do it.
Let me tell you why it's why it's a no-lose situation. You root for the Jets to win. If they don't, whatever. LOL. Even when I wanted you to win, just a mercy game to hand the Texans a loss, you still lost anyway. LOL. So you're not really investing, but I don't think there's any doubt. You want to talk about playoff seeding and where the Bills are going to be in relation to the Texans. You want the Jets to win this game.
Do you know why? You know why I think I'm going to get to a point where I'm going to tell myself it's okay to root for the Texans in this game? Is I believe there are enough tough games left on Houston's schedule where they're going to get their losses. The team is not as good as their record. I don't think that team is as good as its record right now. Losing Diggs hurts a lot. And they next week play the Lions on Sunday Night Football. They also still have the Chiefs and the Ravens on their schedule.
Like, I would pick them to lose all those games.
I can find losses for Houston down the road without them losing to the Jets. I am almost as much as the Bills winning
is
this
the
year
Jets
in
losing?
6-2. I think I'm enjoying the Jets being 2-6 more.
It's pretty good.
I think it's one of my favorite things that's ever happened in football. Is this Jets team being this bad, firing the coach, trades that don't work, just everything. I think it all is amazing. It's the best story of the year.
I would say that is a defendable position that you like the Jets being bad more, because the Bills being this good is totally normal.
Oh, yeah, right. I'm used to this.
Yeah, it's totally normal.
6-2.
And what
this
the Jets
point,
are doing is,
I mean, I guess that's also normal, but not normal when they had expectations.
Right, with Aaron Rodgers. Yeah. All right, 803-0550. Eric and Elma is next up as we connect with our fans. Brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. What's up, Eric?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. So my question is about Keon Coleman. So it seems like the past 2 weeks he's taken a pretty crazy jump. Coincidentally, around the time we got Amari Cooper, how much of that jump do you attribute to Amari Cooper? Are Keon's plays coming a lot of the time when Cooper's on the field, or is this just kind of Keon finally kind of reaching his full potential?
So, yeah, thanks, Eric. I saw one thing on Coleman that really jumps out, and I do not think this is an Amari Cooper point. So he sees single coverage more than almost anybody.
Coleman?
Yeah.
For the year?
For the year.
Okay. Because that's what I was wondering. Like, has that changed since Cooper got here?
Coleman sees single coverage. So, yeah, I mentioned Judah Forking on Twitter at Throw the Damn Ball. That's DAMBALL. Wide receivers seeing percentage of routes against single coverage. Keon Coleman leads the NFL. Separation facing single coverage. Keon Coleman does not separate against single. This, you know, you'll see different metrics of how well you. He's not a separator. He's not supposed to be a separator, and he's not separating. He is getting single coverage, and I think what's happened is he's maybe just grown up a little bit and learned more about how to play the position, more of a connection with Josh Allen. You know, there's the pass that hits him in the back of the helmet a couple weeks ago. Fast forward 2 weeks, and what does he do? He takes it 50 yards. Like, that's a small difference in knowing the play. So
there are go ahead.
Would you disagree there?
No.
I can't say it's going to be Cooper's presence, because if he's the number one single covered guy in the league this year, it's only been 2 weeks of Amari Cooper, and there were 6 weeks without him.
Yeah. I'm watching on NFL Pro some of the catches he had back last week, and like the 25-yarder he had. Like, if you're looking at this play pre-snap, it's Tariq Woolen, who is their best corner.
Yep.
But it's him versus Coleman on an island. Those two people are by themselves, and Cooper's got bracketed coverage on the other side.
Yeah, so
like, so that's going to be, well, I guess more normal. Maybe it's already as normal as it can be. Him he's going to get lined up one-on-one.
And that's something that, I think we talked about this with Joe Marino yesterday, that a lot of teams will do that. We'll take our best corner and put him on your second best guy.
And then we're going to pay more attention.
We'll bracket the other guy.
That's what they did. It looks, the couple of plays that went to Coleman, they all kind of look the same. They all look like they're kind of leaning over towards the Cooper side, and they're just trusting Woolen to cover Coleman.
And this is an example of the Seahawks gambled and lost. They thought, Rick Woolen will cover Keon Coleman today and we'll be fine. And he wasn't. He got a pass interference. He gave up a touchdown. He gave up big plays.
Couple of other 20-yard. There were a couple 20-yard.
And I bet he had good score in coverage, but Coleman has a pretty good win rate at the catch point. So, like, who separates the most or who gets double teamed the most percentage of routes against single coverage? You know, you've got names up and down the board, but the separators are the guys you think they are. Amon-Ra St. Brown, Zay Flowers, Chris Olave.
Oh, look, a Coleman pass out of the slot, by the way. Did you notice that last week?
I did.
I hadn't noticed that. The one down the inseam that went for 21 yards?
That's one where...
That was him in the slot?
I think that's where Cooper will give him a little more flexibility. So,
that's rare, because he's played... That's like maybe his 11th snap of the year in the slot. Like, he hasn't been doing it a lot.
Very, very fast exercise here with me, if you will. Redrafting the wide receivers. What's the order? If there's a redraft of the rookie receivers right now.
Ooh, I like this.
Neighbors is one.
Neighbors is one. He has a 99 open score on ESPN now.
Yes, Neighbors is one. Who's two?
Harrison's two.
Ahead of Brian Thomas Jr.? Brian Thomas Jr. has been very, very good.
Yes.
But sure, Harrison two?
Harrison two.
Brian Thomas Jr. three?
Brian Thomas three. I would still go Adunze four.
Okay.
I think he's the third guy. He's doing tough.
He's doing good things. Okay.
They're also running a lot now.
Okay. You think Coleman right after that? I mean, he's got to beat out. Leggett's been fine.
I think yes. Leggett's been good, but not
Pearsall,
as good.
It's impossible. He hasn't played enough.
Yep.
Worthy.
Worthy looks. The difference is Worthy looks useful, but Coleman looks like. He's showing you signs that there's a complete wide receiver in there.
I would say...
And I don't think Worthy, just because of his size, ever has that. That might be okay. He can still be a very productive player.
Yeah.
But Kansas City has to use him in specific ways. And I wonder if Coleman... The question with him is, could he play the X? And if he can do that, I already feel like I feel good, pretty confident he could do the slot stuff. I feel like Coleman might just be a more well-versed player.
There's a future here, the next 10 games, whatever. So
Coleman over Worthy. Yeah.
You are the Dolphins, and you see what happened to Seattle. You think, put our best corner on him. Let's just do it.
We're not gonna double him. We're gonna double Cooper, and we're gonna try and win the way that Seattle couldn't win. And then next week it's Indianapolis, who don't have very good corners. And the week after that it's Kansas City.
Right.
And then it's San Francisco. You know, when will he get more attention than just single coverage? Because again, to this point, he's faced the highest percentage of single coverage in the NFL.
Right.
And I wonder when that changes. Because you learn that.
Well, is that where Cooper's presence could be important? That if Coleman grows and Coleman earns more respect from defenses, they won't be able to react that way the way they could have before.
They'll have to pick one.
You're not going to leave Cooper by himself.
You wouldn't think. You'll have to gamble.
That's where, that's almost proactive, I think, is maybe Cooper hasn't made a huge impact on Coleman yet, but it'll allow him to continue to see these matchups. Because I do think that. I think if Coleman had these last two games and Amari Cooper wasn't on the other side of the field, every team going forward would say, we're gonna lean more towards his side. And now they probably can't do that.
803-0550. Thanks for the call. Rookies of the year. By the way, who's the offensive rookie of the year?
Jaden Daniels.
It is? Okay, good. I don't disagree.
He's a massive favorite.
You know Brock Bowers is on pace to set the rookie receiving record in terms of catches?
Rookie receiving record for tight ends?
No. Period. Brock Bowers on pace to set the rookie receptions record. Yep.
Come on. What does he have on here?
He's on pace for 111.
He has 52 catches already?
Yep. It's a great year for offensive rookies. Bowers, Daniels, Neighbors, Brian Thomas Jr., Harrison, Coleman.
52 catches,
Brock Bowers. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550.
I think he's number one in the NFL. I think he's number one in the NFL in catches. He is. Garrett Wilson's number two with 51. Brock Bowers has the most catches in football.
And he's not even considered rookie of the year. Yep.
I'm blown away that he leads the league in catches right now.
What a draft class. All right. Jeremy and Joe, 8:30, we're going to get Colts guest. Zach Hicks going to join us to talk about the Richardson decision. We're wide open. Happy Halloween. It's going to be 74 today. Beautiful, beautiful. Hang out with us here on WGR. I run through a couple. You've seen the original Ghostbusters?
Yes.
Josh?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
How about Ghostbusters 2?
No.
Nope.
It's not quite the same. But I would encourage it.
What about the new one?
I've not seen that. Frozen Empire?
The remake?
No, I haven't seen that. Hey, happy Halloween. Jeremy and Joe, Josh Schmidt producing. Where should Buffalo rank, according to Wallet Hub, in best cities for Halloween?
Number one. No.
I mean, city of
we're
good,
pretty good at
city
it.
City of good neighbors, you would think, right?
Yes.
Top 10, maybe.
Of all cities.
You drive around, you're seeing Halloween decorations everywhere.
Correct answer is, according to Wallet Hub, we are 18th. The 18th best city. There's a lot of cities behind us.
Say, how many cities did they
do? That's not bad.
I mean, they've got a ranking of 100.
Okay, that's good.
Who do you want to know?
Pittsburgh.
Oh, it's Dolphins week. How about Miami? Miami's got to be low.
Pittsburgh is 32.
Yep.
Miami is 3.
Whoa.
No way.
Yep. Third best.
That doesn't strike me as a spooky city.
Well, let me give you this, that there were three categories: trick-or-treater friendliness, Halloween fun rank, and weather ranking.
Oh, look at the weather ranking.
Actually,
so are they here today? They need to upgrade the weather ranking. It's 74 degrees
today. Miami's got it. The one place where you can tell the Halloween fun rank, here are the top cities: Vegas, Orlando, New York, L.A., Miami. Come on, you're talking about like parties and clubs and all that.
That's not Halloween.
Here's where we got snubbed: trick-or-treater friendliness. Right? It's a city of good neighbors.
Yeah, we should be top five.
17.
Too low. Far too low. Yeah, that's right. That's a snubbing right there.
You're here to tell me that Garland, Texas is friendlier than us? I don't know anything about Garland, Texas. Anyway, 17th in trick-or-treater friendliness. Our weather score, 12. Not bad at all.
Okay. That's really surprising, actually.
Yeah, fall. I mean, they must know fall is elite. They know fall
is
elite.
They know fall is elite.
Yeah.
Halloween fun rank is where we took a hit.
Hmm.
So each and every one of you, you have to make sure to have more fun.
What do we got to do to have... Right. We got to do
number one. You get up there and you have some fun right now.
Yeah.
Go have fun.
Start scheduling Bills games on Halloween.
Ah. Hey, this game, this Bills game.
Bills
can you
Halloween.
Wear, can you wear a costume? It'll be November what? Like the Sabres had hockey Halloween a couple days before.
Yeah.
Can you wear a costume on November 3rd to a Bills game?
Yes.
Yeah, you can always wear a costume to a Bills game.
I do kind of like, it's tougher because it's always a different day of the week. Like, hey, the Lions and Cowboys get Thanksgiving. The Bills are Halloween. Hey, it's Halloween. Oh, the Bills are playing every Halloween. But then you might have to play on like a Tuesday or something at some point.
Tonight, an old quarterback will dress up as Aaron Rodgers. Hey-oh! Sorry. All right, we'll get a break in. 803-0550. We'll talk with Zach Hicks, who covers the Colts at 8:30, to talk about the decision to bench Anthony Richardson. It is Dolphins week. The Bills play the Colts next week, so we'll talk about the Colts. You know, we know a lot about the Dolphins. We'll still probably check in with them tomorrow. Jeremy and Joe, also, flyover interview tomorrow. Hope you're ready for it. Everything you ever wanted to know about the C5 Galaxy coming tomorrow. Happy Halloween.